There's this idea in political science that we usually look at ideology when there's competition between parties. And in a place like China, where there's only a single party, we wouldn't really find a very organized configuration of preferences, that everyone should have various types of, different types of preferences. But yet, you hear people talking about those on the left and those on the right in China. So I was just curious, would we find some sort of clustering of preferences, or would it be something much less organized?
I want to emphasize that the dispersion of opinions in terms of the performance measure is much less polarized than that in Western democracy. Maybe because of lack of party competition, you don't have competing voices to organize public preferences. But still, there are we do see different orientations, and from online conversations, from microblogs, and these days WeChat, we see different opinions.
China 21 is produced by the 21st Century China Center at UC San Diego's School of Global Policy and Strategy. We are a university-based think tank that produces original research to anchor major policy discussions on China and its relationship to the United States. This podcast features expert voices, insights, and stories about Chinese economy, politics, society, and the implications for international affairs. Learn more at china.ucsd.edu. Welcome to China 21. I'm your host, Samuel Choi. If China's citizens can vote, it would be the largest electorate on the planet. But even without direct national elections, political ideology still plays an important role in how China's one-party government responds to public preferences, controls information, and makes policy. We are delighted today to have two scholars who have pioneered the use of empirical data in studying ideology and understanding political culture in China, Jennifer Pan and Yiqing Xu. Jen, Yiqing, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Jennifer Pan is an assistant professor of communication at Stanford University. Her research examines the strategies authoritarian regimes employ to perpetuate the rule, including censorship, redistribution, and responsiveness, using large-scale data from traditional and digital media, as well as experiments on media platforms. Jen received her PhD from Harvard University's Department of Government and is a graduate of Princeton. Yiqing Xu is an assistant professor at the Department of Political Science here at UC San Diego and a faculty member of the 21st Century China Center. He works on political methodology and political economy with a special focus on development institutions in authoritarian countries. Yiqing received his PhD from MIT and degrees from Beida and Fudan. So you co-authored a paper called China's Ideological Spectrum, and it received considerable attention from academic, policy, and media circles. In it, you analyzed data from an online survey of more than 500,000 people that asked wide-ranging questions on political opinion and outlooks. It asked respondents to choose along a scale from strongly disagree to strongly agree on statements that reflect current debates in areas such as nationalism, traditional values, distributive justice, and civil liberties. Can you tell us what motivated each of you to do this research? And can you explain how understanding ideology in China is important through some of the main takeaways and findings?
Sure. So this is really the story behind this, actually. Jay and I have been thinking about studying political ideology or the configuration of public preferences, the preference of Chinese public, for a while. And about 2 years ago, there's a friend on my WeChat, actually. He posted a blog on WeChat saying that he's going to release some data he collected over the years. So it turns out, so I know this person. He's a he works in the U.S., but back in 2007, he was a grad student in Beida. And he and his friends start to develop a survey, essentially mimic the survey in UK, measuring ideology or ideal points of British people. And they try to do the same thing. They try to do the same thing for the Chinese public. So did they develop 50 questions, of course, specific to the Chinese context, and put it online. And then through word of mouth, more and more people start to answer this survey online. And then at that particular day in 2015, so he released the data to the public and post this notice or ad through WeChat. And then I saw this in my Pengyouquan, in my friend circle, and I immediately emailed Jen and said, maybe we can do something about this data. There's a huge amount of data. Almost 500,000 of people answered this survey with 50 questions. Very rarely we have this chance to collect data. Well, not we, but we have chance to have data that covers a wide range of questions, covering like politics, the preference for economic policies, and social values and traditional values. Mm. So we saw it as a rare chance to do some kind of research to better understand the configuration of attitudes of the Chinese public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say that we're just driven by curiosity of what we would find. There's this idea in political science that we usually look at ideology when there's competition between parties. And in a place like China, where there's only a single party, we wouldn't really find a very organized configuration of preferences, that everyone should have various types of, different types of preferences. But yet, you hear people talking about those on the left and those on the right in China. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious, would we find some sort of clustering of preferences, or would it be something much less organized? And so that's what we mean by ideology. As Yiqing mentioned, it's the configuration of preferences. So what goes with what? If you have this type of preference on trade, are you more likely to have this type of preference on distributive justice? And to the extent that there is this configuration, how is it constrained? So how predictive is that configuration?
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of limitations and advantages of the survey? The size obviously is very impressive in terms of the respondents, but since it was administered online, the respondents skewed heavily towards educated male urban residents. How would you redesign the survey if you could redesign it going forward? Are there any kind of missing populations that are key in making sure that the sample is more representative? So maybe ethnic minorities or migrant workers or people who don't use the internet, you know, senior citizens and others?
Yeah, we see this as a first step to do this kind of research. And there's a huge problem with this data from a scientific point of view, from a scientific sampling point of view. It's not a scientific sample, it's more like a convenient sample. Of course, there's advantage for this kind of opt-in sample as well, but we do realize that from the very beginning that it only represents a small fraction of people in China, as you said, mainly college-age male, and we don't have much coverage for places that does not have much internet penetration, and we cannot reach out to through this survey to as you said, the maybe working class or people who do not use internet. So we are very aware of the limitation of the of this survey, and we try to do something in the paper. We show that we try to do something, use certain statistical technique to improve the to try to like address this issue, but we can never fully address this issue because for some of the subpopulation, we simply do not have such information. But that said, we still think that as a first step to figure out what kind of preference go hand in hand with what kind of preference is still interesting for this particular group of people. Mm-hmm. And then we can maybe extend beyond this population.
Mm-hmm. And Jen, you talked about how you were curious about what is left, what is right in China. So can you talk a little bit more about what is considered leftist in China versus America, and same for, you know, what's considered right in China, political right in China, and maybe going a little bit further into the findings of how these preferences are categorized?
So we actually don't use left or right in the paper, mm-hmm. Because we find different clusterings of preferences, and they may or may not be exactly like what people in general think of as left or right in mm-hmm. China. So the configuration that we see is that if you prefer more a relaxing or liberalization of political institutions, you're more likely to be supportive of free markets and economic reform. You're less likely to uphold kind of traditional values and less likely to be nationalistic. So that's one bundling. Mm-hmm. And then another bundling of preferences is that you are supportive of the current political regime, but you want a reversion to maybe Maoist or communist redistributive policies and state intervention in the market. You're more likely to be nationalistic, and you're more likely to support traditional values. So those are the clustering of preferences that we find.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think the leaders in China are reading into this data, this particular data set, and also your findings through your research? Does it impact their policy making at any level, or what is the role of the state media in covering this particular research, just understand or covering ideology as a topic?
Well, I think it's a good question, but I think we're overthinking about the impact of this particular research. It's just one small step of an interesting question that that we hope more people will start to look at. But personally, I do not think this piece itself will have a huge impact on the society, on the politics in China. But before we delve into this question, I'd like to add more on the on why we are at the very beginning. We're curious about the finding from this data set, from analyzing this data set. I grew up in China, and I went to college in China, in Chinese institutions. And while I was in college, we actually read a lot of debates by Chinese intellectuals. Some we may label them as liberals or people on the right, and some we may label as left or new left. And they have different arguments, they have different views about the reform, about China's past. And we were really immersed, or we're really attracted to this intellectual debate. And it's part of the reason Jen and I were very curious about the results at the beginning. And we see this as a great opportunity to actually look at empirically what are the bundles of or clustering of preference among Chinese public from a very empirical point of view, because previous studies are mostly are analyzing or focusing on those elites or intellectuals. So this is the first, I think, one of the first attempts to actually look at among the public. Maybe it's not the representative sample, but for those we still think a very important subpopulation mm-hmm. of China, what kind of preference are clustering with each other. Mm-hmm. So that's the main motivation. And actually in our first version, we had a discussion of the intellectual history of China and how these debates among intellectuals and among the party elites motivate our research, and whether the findings from the empirical data are consistent with our prior knowledge of our understanding of Chinese not political cleavage, but the clustering of more like clustering of preferences, as people normally talk about, like left and right. We don't use the particular words because we want to avoid confusion, mm-hmm. but we do find preference, clustering of preference among the public, among the sample that we look at, are pretty consistent with the prior of our understanding of Chinese ideology, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And so of the 50 questions or statements that are presented in the survey, one of them reads, Western multi-party systems are unsuitable for China in its current state. And that's one of many, many statements that are in different categories that measure traditional values to how they're pro or anti-market reforms, how they understand individual liberties. So in this particular statement, in what sense is political ideology a measurement of the other in terms of, you know, Confucian or Chinese values versus Western values? especially in the one party context where there really isn't a lot of competition among at least visible or structured political ideologies.
So one thing I would say is that the 50 statements, which, you know, we didn't design, they were designed in 2007, 2008. They were designed to be relatively time insensitive and to reflect debates that mm-hmm. were going on in Chinese society. And it seems that a lot of the debates that were going on is about, you know, where China's position in the world or what decisions China should make in terms of politics and economics, especially as it was and had already been experiencing several decades of economic reform and opening. Mm-hmm.
I think that when we through the review process, we actually submitted this paper mm-hmm. and recently got accepted by one of the journals in our field. Actually, there are a lot of questioning or debate about whether these questions are the best set of questions that can capture the current preferences of the Chinese public. Of course, these surveys are not designed by experts in the field of political science, or in the field of measuring ideal points or ideology. But we still think it's a great first step. It's a very broad coverage from like political preference for political institutions, preference for certain the boundary of individual freedom and state power, and preference for sexuality or homosexuality, and a preference for different kind of economic policies and the role of the state in terms of intervening in the market. So I think it covers a wide range of issues, which is very, very rare in many, or I can say most of the representative surveys in political science, economics, or in sociology. We haven't seen a survey that directly looks at that wide range of questions, because those surveys are not designed to measure ideal points or ideology in China. So we see this as a rare opportunity. Of course, we do have plan to try to improve this survey, and maybe in the future we can develop better measure for ideology in China. Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can go into that a little bit, knowing that especially academic research takes many, many years, and it's already been several years since the survey was designed and then administered. Are there any similar surveys that are now validating or maybe even contradicting your results? And how have global events in the last few years affect your study, especially in, you know, the rise of nationalism and economic populism around the world? You know, what kind of questions do you think you would want to add to reflect kind of the contemporary current debates in China? Maybe one of you can just add one or two.
Oh, I can talk about the existing studies. Mm-hmm. Actually, a graduate student from UCSD, Jason Wu, and his co-author in China, they developed a survey. They basically put 12 to 13 questions from the original Zuobiao mm-hmm. survey that we use to a nationally representative survey and conduct that survey in China. Of course, you cannot. So the one problem of conducting one potential problem of conducting a nationally representative survey is that certain questions you just cannot be asked. Mm-hmm. But those 12 questions are fine, and I think their results are fairly similar to ours. They find the two-dimensional space, we find it three-dimensional, but the interpretation of these dimensions are pretty consistent. They find one is authoritarian versus like preference for more authoritarian or more liberal political institutions, and the other is the role of the state in the market. And what they actually did, they also look at the correlations between the measure of ideology or the measure of ideal points and political participation. I think that's one step further than our study. But I think the main results are pretty consistent with our study.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of what questions we'd like to add for future studies, so in the 50 statements, they cover a wide range of policy issues, but there are a lot of other debates that are not, that don't appear. Things about ethnic politics, things about gender.
Women's rights.
So right now we're in the process of trying to identify more systematically debates that are or have been happening in Chinese society to try to expand the set of questions.
Mm-hmm. And Jen, since you study political communications, I'm curious to hear your take about kind of comparing the U.S. context and the Chinese context. So especially since the 2016 elections, in the U.S., we've seen a new level of misinformation and bias with the flood of fake news and hyper-partisan news media, which play an enormous role in shaping American political culture. What is the role of media in China in influencing kind of public ideological sentiments?
That's a really big question and lots of different parts. I think for us, something we're very interested in is how these preferences form through channels. Is it traditional media? Is it social media? What role does state elites or other elites play? So I think that's the open research question. Mm-hmm. In terms of the 2016 election, so being in a communication department, I got some funny requests from media and other organizations right after, but with very different perspectives. So some, I got asked by journalists, well, with everything happening with fake news in the U.S., should the U.S. adopt the policy that China has taken to stopping the spread of rumors? Has China gotten it all right all along? And there, the key is that China's policy toward rumors is much more expansive than anything that's been on the table or discussed in the U.S. So I think given the differences in context, we need to be really careful to figure out what we're talking about when we're talking about fake news or rumors. And on the other hand, I got different requests that were saying, with everything happening with fake news in the U.S., can we learn something from the China experience? Because doesn't the Chinese government spread fake news? So that's not quite right. We know that the Chinese government engages in online propaganda, but all of that is around cheerleading and spreading positive sentiment, not about altering facts. So again, I think so this is a little bit different from ideology, but in general, when we compare contexts that are so different, like the U.S. and China, we just need to be pretty careful about what we mean when we use terms like fake news or rumors or propaganda.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very, very useful. So as the President of the United States continue to have this openly antagonistic relationship with the free press, what do you think Americans can learn from citizens in authoritarian systems like China in terms of understanding their relationship with the media, in terms of their consumption and demands for facts and truth in light of kind of a governing system that's more and more authoritarian?
That's a really difficult question. I think, so in order to answer your question, we really need to do more research, actually. So a lot of things that we do not know about, so we lack facts about the configuration of preferences in China. Before we do this study, we don't even know whether there is a detectable split or of ideas or difference in ideas in China across different places. And a lot of things remain to be done. Look at different cohorts, how their political preferences are different. There's just so much things that we need to do for in this research agenda. In terms of what we can inform, so what we can learn from the China's experience, I think one way to answer this question is to say. I think a crucial difference between the U.S. and between U.S. and China is that in the absence of electoral competition, the media environment is very, very different. And what we find from this research is that Chinese people, the sample we look at, people are much less polarized than people in the U.S. If we do a fair comparison. If we knew the political measure of ideology of a person, then we can predict his or her preference for different issues much better than in the Chinese case, which means that the media market and the entire the society in terms of the preference configuration are very different. Just not more research needs to be done to be able to answer the question.
Yeah, and you guys did a great start on this topic using data. Maybe we can wrap up our conversation with a more personal question. When I look at the survey, I'm like, oh, I'm very curious. I want to take it, and I want to share it with my family and like everyone I know who's Chinese, just to compare myself and everyone I know. So have you guys been tempted to share the survey with people that are close to you, and what kind of conversation were sparked about kind of these kind of debates about being Chinese and how they view the world and politics? Any examples you can share?
Actually, I took this survey a long time ago before I actually analyzed the data. Mm-hmm. So I was in Beida, and this survey is quite popular among students. I guess my own answer is part of is one observation mm-hmm. In the data set that we analyze. I don't remember how I answered, but if I answer today, I would be probably pretty center in the economic spectrum, but maybe a little bit more liberal in the political spectrum. But people are really, so the response we get from the internet, from some of the media outlets in China, and of course in the US, remind us that people are very, very interested in how their ideas are different from others, from their friends and from the society in general. So it is it's out there. The difference in opinions are out there, and people have the right to express their different views, and they want to know more about it, and that's a fact that cannot be avoided by simply saying there's no difference in opinions. But as I said, I want to emphasize that the dispersion of opinions in terms of the performance measure is much less polarized than that in Western democracy, maybe because of a lack of party competition. You don't have competing voices to organize public preferences. But still there are, we do see different orientations and from online conversations, from microblogs and these days WeChat, we see different opinions. So it's really interesting to track how this media environment evolve over time, and how the state respond to different kinds of ideas.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any particular stories related to your question, but I think this difference in polarization is definitely something there. But I want to be careful about making any normative statements related to if one is better than the other, because actually recently a journalist also asked me, so it looks like China is less polarized than the US. Does that mean the US should learn something from China? I think that this is, again, it's just totally mm-hmm. different systems. They're not competing parties in China that are structuring preferences. So we would definitely expect there to be less polarization. But what's interesting about China, as Yiqing said, is that there are still these clusterings and emerging patterns, but how exactly they'll shape out and evolve over time, I think is something that we want to continue studying. Like you said, is there a rise of nationalism, economic populism? Does that mean there's going to be stronger differences and preferences on those issues going forward? I think those are open questions and things that we'd love to explore in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for both of you and your work in diving deep into the data and just really opening up a new layer of understanding. And we look forward to continue to learn from your research and your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to China 21, the podcast of the 21st Century China Center at UC San Diego School of Global Policy and Strategy. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and connect with us on social media. 谢谢大家.